Support for WMNF comes from our members and Frog Song Organics. Each week, Frog Song Organics delivers healthy produce and pasture-raised meats directly to homes and businesses in the Tampa Bay area. More at frogsongorganics.com, featuring seasonal crops, online shopping, and CSA.
Welcome to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. His topic today will be pharmacogenomics, the way in which an individual's genetic attributes affect the likely response to therapeutic drugs. You are invited to participate in this discussion, or if you have any medical questions, by calling 813-239-9663 or sending an email to dj@wmnf.org. You can also text us at 813-433-0885. Well, good morning to you, Dr. Fred. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. And what have you got for us today?
Well, I had a great weekend. Hope yours was good, too.
Yes, it was. Thanks for asking.
So, I think we should talk about some coronavirus updates since all kinds of stuff is happening around us.
Sure.
We have this raging Delta variant that looks like it's 88% of all cases. All the previous statistics that were based on the Alpha variant really are going out the window. And we're seeing a resurgence to levels that are like the peak last year with the Alpha variant. I spoke with Sarasota Memorial Hospital this morning. They haven't yet updated their numbers, but of 759 total people in the hospital, 115 are there for COVID-19, and half of the ICU, 29 beds, are filled with COVID patients. Positivity testing in Sarasota County is like 11.2%. That was as of Friday. They haven't updated yet. Tampa General, they have greater than 90% of the beds occupied in the hospital with coronavirus, COVID-19. ICU, 56 patients, 111 COVID admits just that day. So there's at least 125,000 breakthrough cases in 38 states. Now, that sounds like a lot, but when you look at the amount of people actually getting infected overall, it's still 0.08% of 164 million people with shots in arms. But still, we're seeing more and more of this because the Delta variant is getting away from the inoculation. I think the main reason is that the particle load is much higher. The virus actually apparently is able to replicate much faster and make more particles. So the concentration of them is higher, so the inoculum is higher, and the likelihood of getting it then is higher. We have to remember, I have just seen some more disinformation videos. People really do not understand what's going on. Immunizations do not prevent all infections. They never have. They actually reduce the amount of it and reduce transmissibility for the most part. However, there is breakthrough here. And we can't see all of the data, but so far I think there have been 1,400 deaths in breakthrough cases. But we have an obfuscation going on in many of the red states. Nine states provide no data. Pennsylvania and Missouri are some of those. 11 states, including Florida, report no death or hospital information. You have to get it directly from the county health department or from the hospitals themselves. That's why I had to call the hospitals, because Governor DeSantis doesn't really want to actually have any of this information getting out. And four states have no total for tally. So we have, you know, a bunch of information that's missing. And it's a real problem. But when you look at, there's a great website that has some summarized information, KFF, K as in King, F as in Fred, F as in Fred.org. If you go to the front page on KFF.org, on the right side, you can see COVID-19 vaccine breakthrough cases data from the state. And not all states are reporting, you can see there. But 4% of all cases in Alaska are breakthrough, 5.9% in Arizona, 3.6% in Arkansas, 1.4% in California. A lot of ones, 1.1, 1.4s. Montana, 3.2%. Oklahoma, 8% of all cases are breakthrough. Utah's at 3.2%. Florida, we don't have the data overall because the governor is hiding it because he doesn't want to be caught with his pants down. And especially as he's recommending, or no, actually not recommending, barring schools from having kids wear masks. The problem is ongoing, and it doesn't look like we're going to get out of this one anytime in the real near future. So wear masks. It is the answer. Masks prevent transmission very effectively. So if you're indoors and there are other people around, wear a mask. It only makes sense. There's no reason to not wear a mask. So please take care of yourself and people around you, because this virus isn't going away, and it's going to be a little more difficult to avoid, especially in Florida, because Florida is, again, the epicenter of the virus on the planet practically, but definitely in the States. We surpassed the four states behind us. There's only one in front of us. That's Louisiana. And so let's move on to today's topic, pharmacogenomics. We've talked about genetics, genomics, and nutrigenomics and how food affects it. Now, the drug interaction issue. Pharmacogenomics is the study of how genes affect individual response to drugs. The current medical treatment paradigm is a bit delusional because it's basing treatment recommendations on an assumption that drugs are one size fits all. They use broad population studies, epidemiologic studies, and figure that, you know, if most people respond this way, it's good for everybody, even though there are outliers. We're finally figuring out what the outliers mean, because about 90% of these outlier problems are due to genetic variability. The things that we are finding are things like failure to respond to the medication as one would expect, or a partial response, and then also adverse reactions. Adverse drug reactions are really costly and a big part of the genetic variability. The reason we're doing pharmacogenomic and genetic studies is to help avoid these adverse drug reactions and to improve efficiency of the medications. As of March 2018, there were 355 different gene drug pairs in the this genetic database. And 35 of them, 10% of them, actually had actionable evidence-based guidelines that we could use to help actually control these adverse events and come up with actually better outcomes. Through this concept and study, we've come up with a couple of new terms for a way to approach medicine. Personalized medicine is one, and that's really what this is. We're looking at each individual and personalizing their treatment to that person. But the preferred term right now seems to be precision medicine. And it is very precise because, we have this really exceptional data that shows how these different drugs metabolize and interact with the body. There are 4 billion prescriptions written in the United States every year. And around 50% of those show therapeutic efficacy. So what's going on with the other 50%? Why are we not seeing that? It's likely that it's due to the genetic variation. Adverse drug reactions are statistically about 7% of all hospital admissions, causing up to 200,000 deaths a day, or a year, sorry, not a day. And it's been reported as being the fourth leading cause of death, adverse drug reactions. Many of these could be prevented if we just knew what the genetic makeup of the individual was. And we do, and we have a lot of interesting things. One of the biggest areas of concern that I first started using pharmacogenomics in was about 15 years ago, maybe even 18 years ago, when we first learned that there is a abnormality in a liver detoxification gene called cytochrome 2C19. This enzyme system metabolizes a drug called clopidogrel, also known as Plavix. Clopidogrel is used to prevent the heart attacks that will occur after a stent is placed. stents increase your risk of a heart attack after sort of preventing one that's in progress, but you're at risk for a bigger heart attack within the year after having the stent placed because of what it does to the inside of the blood vessel lining. And so clopidogrel helps to keep platelets from sticking to that new stent. But in certain patients, the drug is not metabolized appropriately, and it can't. It's a non-functional enzyme, and it can't convert the clopidogrel to its active form. It has to be transformed in the liver so that it works. So some people actually can't do it at all, and other people have a different variation that will actually increase risk and cause more clots. It's an easily done test. LabCorp and Quest have this 2C19 enzyme test available, and we can check people to see if they have a problem. I use one regularly for statin intolerance. It's called the SLCO1B1 gene and enzyme, and that one actually metabolizes the statin. But we found it in other places, like the another anti-clotting agent, warfarin, has some issues with it. The database has many other drugs in it. One of the biggest selections of drugs is the the psychoactive drugs. They call them antidepressants, maybe antipsychotics, but many of these have different metabolisms based on the genetics, and prescriptionists using the antidepressant class medications and other psychotropic medications are using these databases to actually choose better which medication they're going to be using for their emotionally disturbed patient. And it seems to be effective in helping avoid the adverse drug effects and possibly improving some of the concurrent benefits. So I would like to continue the conversation regarding this. If people have questions about drug interaction and their genes or other issues like that, it would be wonderful. I do want to mention that the previous discussion with Amy Goodman regarding deep medicine is extremely important. As we see that the world is on fire, we know that changing the way we deal with our plant life in our yard is really critical. When you take out the grass and you put trees and other plants in and completely cover a yard with green growth, you actually create a cooling area in the neighborhood that actually is a haven for flora and fauna. Other flora seem to come in. I get lots of volunteers in my permaculture yard. But also, I have seen so many more animals, bugs, birds, because they have an environment that's friendly to them. And I believe, personally, that we should ban the use of St. Augustine grass in Florida and ban the use of irrigation to grass, which should be illegal, and the ban the use of herbicides and fertilizers on any grass because it's non-productive, completely useless ground. And it actually increases the toxicity of our environment, and it increases red tide. The use of fertilizer on lawns is probably 50% of red tide. Agricultural use is probably another 30%, and the regular runoff and also the gypsum stacks and other things like that probably add the other 20%. But most of it is our stupid use of fertilizer on our lawns that are wasteful to the environment. On that, do we have any emails, Bill, or phone calls?
I've sent a couple of emails on off, but no phone calls, so let me do a shout-out again and tell people that they're listening to WMNF Tampa and the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey. And you're invited to join in on the conversation by calling area 813-239-9663 or continue sending your emails to dj@wmnf.org. And you can also text us on your smartphone at 813-433-0885. Operators are standing by.
Excellent. We do have one here. While awaiting the Novavax vaccine, I am considering the other options. However, the Bell's palsy reaction from Pfizer and Moderna is quite concerning. Given that, based on your research, would the Johnson & Johnson be a better choice if one needs to choose? Frankly, I don't like the virus platform. Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca use a virus to infect you and inject your body with artificial coronavirus DNA template that goes into your cell nucleus and creates a mRNA template that goes into your cells and has you create the spike protein in your cells. Given the fact that it's actually an infection, one that can't reproduce, so it can't go infect anybody else, but it infects your cells the same way any virus infects your cells, I am less inclined to do that. And the mRNA, Pfizer, Moderna, Bell's palsy is occurring with any kind of intervention that can cause inflammation. Bell's palsy and those kind of events like Guillain-Barré even are associated with all vaccines in the past and many other interventions. So I prefer at this point the mRNA platform versus the virus platform. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, that seems...
Oh,
I was going to say, the board's lit on up with that last announcement. So I've got Crystal and about three or four of her close friends on the line. Let's get started with Crystal here.
Hey, Crystal.
Hey, Dr. Fred. I was wondering, I check the 65-plus box when I fill out forms, and yes. I am having problems assimilating iron supplements. I'm finding that I'm needing iron in my diet, and I'm not quite sure what to take, and certainly my diet is questionable.
Okay. Iron is a very difficult to absorb substance. One thing that we know that enhances iron absorption is vitamin C. If you one of those things that came out of probably about 20 years ago, the summer salad with spinach and fruit on it, fruit with the vitamin C in it really helps the spinach get absorbed, or the iron from the spinach get absorbed. Another thing that's a problem is chronic gastritis can reduce the amount of acid you have in your stomach. Use of proton pump inhibitors and even H2 blockers like famotidine or Pepcid will reduce your acid, and you need the acid to absorb the iron. It won't dissolve and it won't commit. So if you have any of that going on, you're going to have lower iron. One of the best iron to take that would be absorbable are organic chelated iron. And the one I use is, I believe it's ferric bisglycinate. It is from the company that is the patenter and pioneer in chelated minerals called Albion, A-L-B-I-O-N. Many different supplement companies use Albion minerals, and you can see that your supplement has the Albion minerals in it because it'll have a gold medallion label on it that proves that it's from Albion. Those things could really help. How does that work for you, Crystal?
Well, my gastric acid is good in my system. And I take vitamin C. I've been doing a lot of good regimen since the COVID started almost 2 years ago. What I'm finding, let's see, I'm trying to see what I'm taking, is iron bisglycinate. Oh, I'm not saying that right at all.
It's probably iron bisglycinate, the one that I like.
Oh, okay. So it is the right one, and it says 25 milligrams gentle, but it totally messes with my intestines.
Well, I think you ought to turn back to your natural doctor that's been prescribing that for you, or get a little workup on your gut, because that's probably the issue, Crystal.
Okay, terrific. Well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And I've got Diane on the phone here with a sore shoulder.
Hello, Diane.
Hi, Dr. Harvey. Recently, my right shoulder is hurting a lot. When I pick my arm up forward, going forward and up, it's okay. If I try to pick it out toward the side a little bit, it's very painful. I don't know what kind of injury I did to it, but I am worried I tore something, or I don't know.
Yes, I think you may have actually torn your rotator cuff, and that can happen over a chronic time period. It could happen from an acute injury, but that symptom you described is pretty classic for a supraspinatus or infraspinatus problem in the rotator cuff muscles. I would go to get an evaluation from either a physical therapist, an MAT, muscle activation technique specialist, and there are several in the Tampa Bay area, and or an orthopedist. I'd go to somebody who does the physical work first, because you might be able to just work this out through some good exercise. Also, deep tissue massage can sometimes help remove some of the restrictions that put the shoulder in the frozen position that makes those tendons tear.
Okay. So a physical therapist, and what was the middle one called? A
muscle activation technique. Look that one up. It's a really brilliant personal training technique that's got me out of two rotator cuff problems.
Muscle activation technique. Okay.
Yeah. Class 4 laser also helps to repair tendons, and there's a great supplement from BioAmerica called Synovix Tendon Ligament, S-Y-N-O-V-X Tendon Ligament. I took that for a year to heal my rotator cuff.
Oh, a whole year, wow. So
yeah.
It's going to be a long, slow recovery.
Oh, yeah. It's a subtle thing, and it just takes time. You have to learn how to move your body in a better way so you don't re-injure it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Who do you have, Bill?
All right. I've got Jeff from Lutz here for you.
Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, Dr. Harvey. I have had for a while now tingling in my right foot. I think it's called neuropathy.
Mm-hmm.
And taking B vitamin supplements, which helps.
Yes.
And I also have gout in the same leg, and been taking the cherry tart concentrate, which definitely helps. But is there anything else I could do?
Well, gout's a difficult problem, and so are you on a low purine diet, a diet that avoids making gout crystals?
Which would be, I'm finding out, eliminate chicken and beef.
There's a bunch more things. I would look up online low purine, P-U-R-I-N-E. That's
right.
The gout diet. And
okay.
You avoid fatty meat, sugar, alcohol, shellfish, crustaceans. Those are bad. But as far as the neuropathy, there's a really excellent supplement that has been proven clinically to help repair the damaged nerves. It's called alpha lipoic acid, L-I-P-O-I-C. And that is usually dosed 600 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day, and it usually takes 3 months or so to get a really good effect. By then, you should know it's going to have effect for you.
Okay.
All right.
Good. Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too.
You ready for one more? Joanne from Tampa?
Sure. Absolutely. Joanne?
Hi there. I hope I'm on the right. So I heard Dave talking about putting, like, kill bugs, you know, stuff like that on the lawn that are poisonous and things like that. And I'm actually from Utah, and out there they have a thing called live earth, and it is mineral that is taken out of the ground. It's not processed. It's not anything. And it's, like, close to 100 different minerals, and that's what I do. For pesticides on my rose bushes, I can have one covered with aphids, and I put about a third of a cup of this live earth at the bottom of it, and within like 3 or 4 days, the aphids are gone, and they're gone for like 5 or 6 weeks. And also, I use it in my garden, and it makes much more nutritional food. It puts like, I mean, it's got amazing all the supplements and minerals and stuff that people take. So people that don't want to put insecticides and stuff, it is a good thing to check into. And it's Live Earth from Emery County, Utah, E-M-E-R-Y. And no, I'm not any part of the business or anything, but it's something I found that we don't have to poison our horses. I've been organic and gardening for like 30 years now.
Wonderful. That's a great tip. I love that. Anything we can do that enhances the yard. And actually, I just looked up Live Earth. It's actually a humic acid product. And humic acid is very interesting. Humic acid comes from the fermentation of the plants in the soil. It's basically a peat moss-derived substance. And the moss grows, absorbs the minerals, then the fungi break it down, and you get this product that's full of minerals and organic material, and it's really, really rich. It sounds like a great thing. I'm going to have to have my son explore this because he's my permaculture gardener. But anything we can do that does not add poison and also adds nutrients to the soil is a great thing.
Yeah,
thank
I
you
had
so much,
to, with my soldering temple, I had to actually send it to her because you can't find it out here anywhere. She's now moving to St. George, Utah, so she's not going to be here. But if somebody wants to carry it out here, please, because I had to send it. Anyway, you have
to... Well, it looks like you can just go to Live Earth Products and order it, and it looks like it's right there.
Perfect. Anyway, you have a lovely day, and it was nice hearing your show.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, the well's dry on this end
okay,
right now.
Okay, so we'll go to the email. My almost 89-year-old mother has basically lost use of her hands. They are blue and purple, and the diagnosis of Raynaud's syndrome, carpal tunnel, and arthritis have been given. Things slip out of her hands. They're freezing. She's tried all kinds of different things, including arginine cream, hand warmers, and paraffin wax treatment. That's a difficult one. It does sound like she has Raynaud's phenomenon because when the hand turns blue and purple and gets painful in the cold, that's part of that issue. And it's related to autoimmunity. And one thing we might do is to clean up the diet a bit, make sure we don't have the things that would trigger autoimmunity like gluten and dairy. But there are treatments for the Raynaud. A blood pressure medication called a calcium channel blocker might be useful to help prevent some of that coldness. I would actually seek help from a functional medicine doctor to see if you can find some solutions there. Next one says, my friend is taking TMS sessions. TMS is transcranial magnetic stimulation, and she wonders if I have any thoughts on efficacy. Transcranial magnetic stimulation is similar to doing electroconvulsive therapy for recalcitrant depression. If the mood can't break with medications and therapies, then we might do these last resort kind of efforts. They are potent and they work, and they're to be used if you can't break out of that depression.
Okay, before we go to Gary, I'm going to give the phone number on out again.
Well, dear listeners, to pitch your comments or medical questions to Dr. Fred, just call 813-239-9663 or send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. But wait, there's more. You can even text us on your phone at 813-433-0885. So, give us a call, 813-239-9663, or send an email at djwmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Well, now back to you, Dr. Fred.
I think we've waited long enough for Gary from Clearwater here for you, Dr. Fred.
Oh, hello, Gary's on. Hello, Dr. Harvey. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. You know, we live in a state with a lot of sun. And when I go to the beach or I go by the pool by my apartment, I always spray sunscreen. And when I'm sweating and my pores are opening up and all that, is it safe to use that sunscreen on your body?
That's a good question, Gary. Yeah, we're in some really hot times, and we're doing a lot of sweating. I actually prefer to put the sunscreen on before I leave the house so that my skin isn't all sweaty. It goes on better in that first layer, actually adheres better. When reapplying after being in the water or after sweating, it's a little more difficult. It usually gets quite smeary. But as far as safety, well, you can improve the safety of anything you put on your skin by paying attention to the ingredients in the product. So most of the commercial products have a lot of petrochemical nasty stuff in them. Almost all of the commercial products do. You need to look for organic products that have plant-based organic creams that suspend the sunblock within. And the preferred sunblock is not a chemical like oxybenzone or avobenzone or homocinamate or any of these organic chemicals, many of which don't seem to have a lot of issues, but oxybenzone we know has some hormonally active issues, and we don't want to be using that at all. But titanium oxide and zinc oxide are pretty safe in those organic creams.
Well, where would you go to get organic creams?
Many local health food stores have them. Even some of the local pharmacies do. But I would go to any of the local health food store chains or even the national ones because they all carry organic products, and that would be the best. In fact, I'm not going to name product names, but there's actually a Tampa-based organic producer. He's been in Tampa forever, and you can find that at one of the local chains that has about 15 stores in the area. So, yes, there's lots of good options out there for you.
Okay, I'll check it out. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Here we have one by email or text. Hi, we have a number of friends with chronic pain. Strangely, all are women. We see them as very careful with their health, and they look healthy. We wonder how much of it is psychological. Rick from East Tampa. So I believe that pain has quite a lot of sources. You know, we have the mind that perceives the pain, and we have pain receptors that can be turned off and turned on. We even have inflammation of the brain that can make pain perception be much worse, than, such as chronic fatigue / fibromyalgia syndrome. There's really a really fiery brain that misperceives minimal pain sensations. And so we have to actually take care of the inflammation in the brain. So, you know, since it's in the brain and current medical paradigm is delusional about what's going on in the brain and what the mood and emotions are, there's biochemistry and there's also energy associated. Your thoughts produce biochemistry. Your physical movements produce biochemistry. If you smile, you turn on genes that turn on the happy genes. If you frown, you turn on genes that turn on the sad genes. And so you actually can shift pain in a lot of different ways. So pain is psychological. Pain is physical. Pain is mental. And pain is spiritual. So unless we address the whole being as we do in functional medicine, and take care of all the aspects, including our relationship with our job, our home, our dog, our family, all these other things. If we don't take care of our relationship with food and with exercise, we're going to have pain. And when you have pain that's not controlled, there's a real problem because we need to actually then figure out what's going on down deep to help alleviate that pain. But yes. Psychological pain is real. There's no question. From Henry in Tampa, what, if any, are good home therapies to address a pinched nerve in the neck and shoulder area? Also, would acupuncture be a safe therapy to try? That's a good question. So let's start with the pinched nerve in the neck. So neck pain may or may not be a pinched nerve. It could be a tight muscle. When you have imbalanced muscles anywhere in the body, you can get pain in other places because all the body connects. If you have stress, you can have tense muscles that might actually pinch the nerve running through the neck towards the arm. So massage therapy often helps this kind of problem. Chiropractic is another good method of taking care of it. Acupuncture has been proven to help with chronic pain syndrome. It doesn't happen overnight, though. If you're going to see an acupuncturist, you're going to need to do 10 sessions to get some pain relief when it's a chronic pain. Class 4 laser is a modality that some acupuncturists and chiropractors and physical therapists use that is actually a very good modality to reduce pain. There are lots of things you can do to help with that. Good luck, Henry.
Keep reading. I don't have anybody here, so let me give the phone number on out to join the conversation at 813-239-9663 or continue sending your emails to DJ at WMNF.org. And we get a lot being sent in by text from the smartphone, area 813-433-0885. So what do you got for us, Dr. Fred?
Kevin in Palmetto is asking if I would like to address the county mosquito control efforts with regards to permaculture yards and backyard bees. How can we make them stop? They claim it's a human health protection necessity. Well, we do have a delicate balance that we walk there with the way the government works on this. We need more empowered individuals doing permaculture so that we have more of a large organization to actually work on this. There are lots of people out there. They are working on it. Unfortunately, the big players, big corporations, have organized efforts to keep this stuff going. When you look at who sponsors the county extension projects for the agriculture for the state, it's basically Monsanto funded and Mosaic funded. So we get a skewed view. They will not, at the county extension, discuss the use of glyphosate other than to read the package label that says, when properly applied and properly utilized, there is very little harm in this product. What a political statement. Unfortunately, we know that glyphosate is a disruptor of many systems, including our soil microbiome. So it's going to be a long, hard road because we have so many people in capitalism that like to deny science so they can make more profit. It's just going to be a matter of time. Keep working at it, though, because we can, as a group, keep working at it. That's all it's going to do. We have to just keep plugging away. It's a long, hard process to move this ship.
All right. Well, I got a couple of folks here. I got Celeste, Nancy, and Bobby. So let's get started with Celeste from Tampa.
Hello, Celeste.
Hi. For the last few weeks, my ring finger on my right hand bends. This happens while I'm sleeping. I'll wake up and it's just bent over, and then I have to unbend it. And so I unbend it. If I have to go to the bathroom, I come back, go to sleep, it bends again. It's a little weak, and then during the day I exercise it, and it seems to be okay. But it continually bends, and I don't know why. Do you have any ideas?
Well, it sounds to me like you've got a possible trigger finger there, and that's usually inflammation of the tendon sheath. You have a tendonitis working on that. Is there any pain?
Not really. It just feels weak, and it's a little painful. I mean, I wouldn't even call it pain. It's a little uncomfortable to unbend it, but
yeah,
it just keeps doing that.
Yeah, it sounds like you have inflammation in there, and so the use of fish oil, some proteolytic enzymes, a combination of curcumin and boswellia are anti-inflammatory. Even topical creams, it sounds odd, but I've had lots of patients talk about EU oil helping with, I think primarily it's because you're massaging the area and you're getting movement again. But if using some anti-inflammatories isn't effective, you might want to go to see a hand therapist. Or a neurologist to get an evaluation there. If it's weak, the weakness concerns me. So I would, if not improve with doing anti-inflammatories, I would definitely see a doctor about that.
Okay, I am taking curcumin, and I do take cod liver oil daily. What was the topical you suggested?
One of the things that one of my patients has been using is emu oil, and it seems to help them. Another thing is really nice that relaxes muscles is CBD lotion. Cannabidiol, the cannabis extract, is very relaxing to muscles and also anti-inflammatory. You can get some nice lotions that you could put onto the area as well.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you
Best
very
wishes.
Much. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right, and here's Nancy from St. Pete. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi.
Hello, Nancy.
Thank you for taking my call. I had wanted to follow up with some things you mentioned at the beginning about genetics. My two sisters and I We all develop neuropathy in our feet in our either our late 50s or early 60s. And, you know, I didn't want to just take, and we're tested, and the doctor just wants to put you on antidepressants or, you know, guess at medicine. So none of us wanted to try that. So we have been doing, like another gentleman mentioned, making sure we get D-complex, omegas, alpha-lipoic acid. But mainly I eat spinach and broccoli a lot because I was read that that contained that substance. And Cucurmin mm-hmm. and all of that, but not a lot. That hasn't really helped. And I was wondering if you were familiar with, in the last few years, I've seen businesses opening up saying they can help with laser or light therapy for this treatment. And I was wondering if you had patients or you knew if, you know, that did work for some people or is it really just a come on?
Well, neuropathy is a really complex issue, and if everybody in the family has it, that seems like there's probably a familial thing, and you might want to get genetic testing. Genomic Medicine Works is the company that I work with, and they do a really good job of looking at your genome and finding out where you have the holes. We may find something that's very specific and could be fixed. On the other hand, I've never seen food-based alpha-lipoic acid ingestion change a person's neuropathy. 600 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day, 1200 to 1800 milligrams of alpha lipoic acid is therapeutic in reversing neuropathy pain. B vitamins, not just any B complex is acceptable. Methylcobalamin or methyl B12, methyl folate or 5-hydroxy methyl folate, pyridoxine, or that's B6, in the form of pyridoxal-5-phosphate, and benzothiamine, which is activated thiamine. These are the ones that have been proven in studies to actually affect the neuropathy in doses like 1,000 micrograms of folate, 1,000 micrograms of B12, 50 milligrams of the B6 in that special form. And those would be 100 milligrams or 200 milligrams of the benzothiamine. These are the kind of therapeutic doses. There are no medications that reverse neuropathy. All of the medications available in Western pharmacology are to dull your brain so you don't remember that you had the pain. It just makes you not feel it any longer. I hope that helps.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You want to take some more calls or go to emails? What can I do for you?
I'll look at a couple emails here. We have have there been any studies on Novavax and blood clots? Actually, there's very little studies coming out on Novavax except for efficacy. And I think that we need to wait to see how their application goes. I talked to them last on Friday, and they have still the same message. We are filing in the third quarter. Here's another one. I've been rehabbing feral cats and kittens, and I've contracted ringworm. What human medicine should I put on it? Ringworm is easily treatable with over-the-counter medications you can get at any pharmacy. Lotrimin AF is a very common one. I would start with that. If it doesn't work, you could go to a dermatologist and get something more potent, because sometimes more tropical fungi don't respond well, but classic ringworm almost always does. Do we have anybody on the phone?
There we go. I've got actually three waiting for you, Doctor. Let's start with Bobby from Tampa.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello. Good to talk to you again, Dr. Harvey. The last time we spoke, I told you that I had a severe case of COVID, and it left me with all kind of problems, including depression, and you gave me some things to take. It was mostly food-based, and it worked. It was stuff with resveratrol and anti-inflammatories, antiviral food, and it worked. That part worked.
Excellent.
So I just wanted to say that I still have an issue in the morning with the brain fog. It goes away, but it doesn't go away until like 9 o'clock. I wake up about 6, and it takes me about from 9 o'clock to kind of get my head together. Is there anything that can kind of speed that process up or either lessen it a little bit?
Well, that's a really good question. One of the more common things would be disrupted sleep. If you have snoring or sleep apnea, that would be a problem.
Now, the sleep part, I probably sleep about 5 to maybe 6 consecutive hours. I may wake up and use the bathroom once or something, but there is a lag between how fast I go back to sleep.
And so total sleep in bed at night, how many hours are you getting?
A good night between 7 and 8.
But what's your average?
Probably more on the 7 side.
Okay. So you may want to actually go to bed earlier. There's a lot of intense energy going on right now, and many people I've been talking to are having disrupted sleep. They're waking up earlier. And I think the only answer is really to go to bed earlier, unless you want to take sedatives, and I don't think that's really a great idea. Try just going a half hour earlier and see if that helps.
In
recovery from long-haul COVID, you need lots of rest. So that's the whole thing. If you can get 9 hours in bed, it would probably even be better.
Okay, so now this doesn't involve any daytime napping, but just try to get it consecutive hours of deep sleep at night?
Yes, it's the most effective. If you can go to bed before 10 o'clock and not get up until 7 o'clock, that would be excellent.
It's probably not going to happen, but I will see if I can move that clock around a little bit to get those hours in and see what that does. And I'll call you back and let you know.
All right. See what you can do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, and got Mary Ann from Odessa here for you with a strange reaction after visiting her eye doctor.
Hello. Yeah.
Maybe I don't have Mary Ann there.
She's talking. I can hear you, Mary Ann. I'm not sure everybody else can, though.
Okay. Well, shall I proceed?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Going to eye doctor to get your eyes checked, and when they dilate your eyes to check for cataracts and see how your diopters are doing and stuff, I always have a weird fuzzy feeling when I come out of there, and I don't think it's anxiety because I don't think I get wound up, but the second last time that I went, I actually fell down on the sidewalk outside the doctor's office, and I've never fainted in my life, so I don't even know what that feels like, but anyway, everyone scurried to come to my assistance, and I had bloody knees and a shoulder that was scratched up and stuff. And
wow.
Are people possibly allergic to the dilution serum that they use? Or
yes, they could be, but you don't have an allergy. The dilating drops are actually neuroactive chemicals that work on your nervous system. They're in really small doses and applied directly to the eye, but you absorb that. As soon as it gets into your conjunctiva, you absorb that into your system. And considering that it's right next to your brain, it's likely that you have some neurologic effect from this. I would tell the doctor you can't do those dilating drops, the kind that he's been using. They do have other options. But
oh, they do. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely tell him that you have a terrible reaction to it. It's actually an adverse drug response, probably genetic, as we were talking about earlier on the show.
Yes, yes. Well, I appreciate your show, Doc. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You ready for Rachel from Sarasota?
Yes.
I believe Rachel. We may have already, may have sent in an email already, so let's hear her story.
Okay.
Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
I have great respect for you and your show. I do.
Well, thank you.
I have difficulty, and I've had this pretty much all my life, in the morning, getting up, getting enough energy. Gotten my iron levels up, so I know but that's probably not that, because it still persists. I don't know what it could be, and I don't know what to do to improve it.
Well, there's a lot of things. Have you had your thyroid checked?
Thyroid, no.
So thyroid is a very common cause of fatigue in the morning and all day. And another thing is adrenals. Sometimes people have very sluggish adrenal activity, and their cortisol and their adrenaline don't get as high as they should in the morning. You can do a salivary adrenal test and a neurotransmitter test to check and see if the adrenals are working. I would look at adrenals and I would look at thyroid before I, since you already have ruled out sleep apnea. That's the place I would go.
I don't think it's thyroid because my pulse is high, not low.
Uh-huh. And you can have fatigue from having hyperthyroidism too. It's really weird because it exhausts your body. So okay. I would get checked. I think that's the best thing. You need to get some laboratory evaluation because you have a chronic condition here that doesn't appear to be sleep apnea.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, Rachel.
I've got nobody here, but remind right. folks that you're listening to WMNF Tampa and the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred. We're down to about the last 5 minutes, so if you want to give a call in at 813-239-9663. And back to you, Dr. Fred.
Here's one from W, and comes from somewhere in Tampa Bay. You've mentioned that inflammation is caused by sugar, alcohol, gluten, and she puts in parentheses, possibly caffeine too. Are these things that I avoid in my own personal diet? I most definitely limit added sugar, although I have to treat once in a while. I do not drink alcohol. I do not use gluten. And I have recently given up caffeine because we live in a stressful society and I don't need to have any more things adding to my stress. I have the gene that is the slow caffeine metabolism gene, and one mug of coffee in the morning will last me for probably 18 hours. And my staff doesn't need to see me after I've had one mug of coffee. So yes, all of those things are actually problematic, and especially alcohol. We found that even 1 ounce a day of alcohol increases your risk of breast cancer by something like 50%. So yes, avoid them. Here's another email. Is there anything that I would recommend for optimizing memory? This person has a great memory for detail. But remembering names of people, music names, or other things like that are harder. This person has had this issue since late 20s and is now middle-aged. I have a problem with names of people also because I'm kind of trained to have a chart in front of me. I don't do a very good job of remembering names with faces. I remember all the faces and know that I've known them, but it's difficult. And this is lifelong as well. So things you can do to improve memory are to go on to online programs like Lumosity or Brain HQ or any of those different things that are available that you can do brain training. You can actually do other things like learning a new musical instrument or learning a new language. Those are very stimulatory as well. But to have one specific thing for optimizing memory, I would say limit your stress is the best thing you can do because cortisol kills your memory. So a meditation practice, an exercise practice, and avoiding stressful people is a really brilliant thing.
Well, we're down to about the last 2 minutes if you want to take another phone call.
I can do that.
Okay, well, I've got John from Tampa here for you.
Hello, John.
Good morning, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling concerning some PVCs that I've been experiencing. It started in 2018, and they would come and go. And so this last time that I had them was about 2 to 3 weeks after I'd taken my second COVID shot. So the thing that's really interesting with these that, you know, I've gotten where it was so bad, I ended up in the emergency room twice. I've been going to the cardiologist since 2018. They've done all kinds of tests. Everything came back negative. The last echocardiogram I did was like 4 weeks ago and came back, you know, clean. In fact, they told me that I'm 56 and they told me I have a heart of a 30-year-old. But nonetheless,
the issue is that you have had the shot does cause vascular
issues. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. There's a music in the background. I couldn't hear you.
Yes. So it seems that you do have some vascular issues, probably or possibly as a result of getting the injection. I have heard palpitations and many other things coming from getting these interventions. I've got to run now because we're at the end of the show. So next week, we're going to be talking about detoxification. The Environmental Working Group, skin deep and cleaning products. I want to talk about supporting detox organs and maybe even some removing specific toxins.